To the perspiring officers in the cramped Tactical Operations Center, TOC, aboard the UNSC Corvette Bumrush in high orbit above Tribute, it did seem like a perfect takedown. A rare victory in what had so far been a frustrating cat-and-mouse conflict. But then Avery cautioned,
"Argus online. Haven't seen anything yet."
The staff sergeant pulled his chin off the comm switch inside his helmet and continued sweeping the air around him with a palm-sized wedge of black plastic, perforated by microscopic holes. This was a tactical version of an Argus device, a portable laser spectrometer used to sniff out traces of explosive chemical compounds. Larger, more powerful units were deployed at Tribute's spaceports, highway toll plazas, and maglev train stations, all the major choke points of the colony's transportation grid. Despite the density of coverage, the INI bomb makers had become quite adept at fooling the system by concealing their explosives in ever-changing mixtures of non-volatile compounds. Every time they hit a target with something an Argus thought was no more dangerous than, say, a bar of soap, ONI would analyze the explosive residue and add the new chemical signature to the detection database. Unfortunately, this was a reactive strategy that heavily favored the insurrectionists, who were constantly changing their recipes. Avery frowned at his Argus. The thing was clicking loudly, trying to get a lock on what it believed might be a new mix. But the firefight had filled the air with an invisible soup of chemical possibilities. The three other Marines and Alpha Squad were conducting a visual search, checking the workshop's clusters of autosynthesizers and machine tools, but so far they hadn't found anything that looked, as best as they could tell, like a bomb. Avery took a deep breath, then relayed the bad news to the TOC.
"Argus is blind. Please advise. Over."
The staff sergeant had been fighting the insurrection long enough to know what would happen next. The things they would have to do to get the actionable intelligence his officers required. But he also knew these were the kinds of things a smart Marine didn't do without a direct order.
"ONI believes the ordnance is in play," replied Avery's CO, a battalion lieutenant colonel named Aboim.
"Take the gloves off, Johnson. My authorization."
While Avery's squad searched the workshop, Burns quickly brought the four innies who had survived the firefight to their knees in the center of the shop floor. All had their clean suits' hoods removed and their wrists bound together behind their backs with plastic ties. Avery met Burns' mirror-visored gaze and nodded his head. Without a moment's hesitation, Burns raised one of his thick-soled boots and brought it down on one of the nearest innies' outstretched calves. The man waited a full second before crying out, as if he were, like Avery, surprised that the thud of Burns' boot hitting the floor was louder than the near-simultaneous snap of his leg. Then the innie screamed, loud and long. Burns waited patiently for him to take a breath. Then, through his helmet's exterior speaker, he asked,
"The bombs, where are they?"
Avery guessed one broken leg would be enough, but the innie was tough, uneager to rat to agents of a government he despised. He didn't beg for mercy or toss out any of the usual anti-imperial invectives. He just sat there, glowering into Burns' visor, as the staff sergeant broke his other leg. Without his feet to balance him, the man toppled face first onto the floor. Avery heard the sound of teeth snapping like sticks of chalk against a blackboard.
"Next, it's your arms,"
Burns said matter-of-factly. He knelt beside the man, palmed his head, and wrenched it sideways.
"Then I get creative."
"Tires.
In the tires."
The words bubbled from the innie's mouth. The Marines and Avery squad immediately moved to the stacks of large tires placed around the workshop's walls, lifted them gently to the floor, and began probing their wheel wells. But Avery knew the innies were smarter than that. Taking Burns' victim at his word, he guessed the tires were the bombs, that the innies had mixed the explosives into their synthetic rubber treads, a devious innovation his Argus soon confirmed and uploaded to the TOC. The tires' explosive compound wasn't in the detection database, but the ONI officer advising the mission couldn't have been more pleased. For once, they were a step ahead of the enemy, and it took less than a minute before they got a positive ID.
One of dozens of aerial Argus drones patrolling the main highway into Tribute's capital city, Casbah, caught a whiff of the compound in skid marks created by a 16-wheel hauler as it veered into the parking lot of a Jim Dandy roadside diner. Some, if not all, of its tires were bombs waiting to be blown. As the drone, a tiny disc a meter wide, kept aloft by a single shrouded rotor, circled high above the hauler, it detected a second trace of the explosive inside the Jim Dandy. Scrutinizing a live feed of the drone's thermal camera overlaid with Argus data, the officers in the TOC determined the trace originated from the restaurant's crowded food counter, from a man sitting three stools from the front door.
"Marines, get back to your birds," ordered Lieutenant Colonel Abouim. "You've got a new target."
"What about the prisoners?"
Byrne asked. The blood from the innie's fractured legs and ruined mouth had pooled darkly around his boots. The next person to speak was the operation's Oni representative, an officer Avery had never met in person. Like most Oni spooks, he preferred to remain as anonymous as possible.
"Is the one who talked still alive?" the officer asked.
"Affirmative," Avery replied.
"Pack him up, Staff Sergeant. Neutralize the rest." There was no sympathy in the officer's voice, not for the kneeling innies nor their marine executioners. Avery clenched his jaw as Byrne switched his M7 to semi-automatic and shot each innie twice in the chest. The three men fell backwards and did not move. But Byrne gave them each a dead check, another single bullet to their foreheads, to be sure. Avery couldn't help staring at the carnage, but he did his best not to let the torn blue fabric of the innies' clean suits and the white smoke curling from Byrne's weapon imprint in his mind's eye. Memories had a habit of coming back, and this was a scene he would rather not revisit. As Byrne hefted their lone innie prisoner over his shoulder, Avery motioned the other Marines out the workshop to the waiting Hornets. Less than 15 minutes after they'd dropped in, the two squads were clipped back into place. The Hornets' thrusters surged, and they streaked back the way they came. But this time they flew for speed, high over the volcanic plain.